now from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH. This is Sports Daily.
Welcome in, everybody. Happy Monday to you after a busy sports weekend. Jacob Albrock, TJ Cleland here on Sports Daily, and we have, as we do on most Mondays, a lot to get to here on the program. A full college basketball weekend, pretty interesting college basketball weekend for a variety of reasons. When it comes to Wichita State, KU, K-State, we'll dig into all of it today, including a visit with Shocker head coach Paul Mills a little bit later in this hour. We also had a ton of football since the last time we talked. We finished up the other CFP semifinal game and, of course, got the NFL wild card round almost all the way wrapped up. One more game tonight. Wild card round, as the NFL playoffs typically do, delivers fantastic football games, most of them decided within one score. So we'll talk about that as well as we make our way through here today. It's all What's on Tap, brought to you by Wichita Brewing Company, where you can drink Buffalo Sweat and help Buffalo right here in Kansas. In January and February, at all three WBC locations, a portion of proceeds from every draft pint of Buffalo Sweat Oatmeal Cream Stout will help support Maxwell Wildlife Refuge. WBC pizza and beer made here. You can call us at 869-1240. You can leave us video comments, Facebook, YouTube, X. Thanks for watching us on 12 News Connected. Leave us your voice messages through the Odyssey app if you're listening there. TJ, good morning. How are you?
I'm tired, Jacob. It was a busy weekend. A lot of football to watch, a lot of basketball to watch. The Shockers might be back. I think that they're undefeated when Jacob Brock is in attendance. Is that correct?
Yeah. They've done where to 2-0 this year, maybe 3-0 when we've been there. I'm excited to talk Shockers. We'll do it with Paul Mills in just a little bit. But that was at least a re-inspired performance in front of one of the better crowds I've seen there this year. It was a pretty good Sunday afternoon crowd, so that was good to see that. Didn't get to 67 yesterday, which was you know, my kids were looking forward to that. But that's all right. We'll take it in a win. KU with just about a billion more questions. KU probably will end up being one of our bigger topics of the day. In K-State, I don't know, TJ. What? I mean,
it's not good.
9-7.
I don't know. Are they gonna? I think that's the biggest question that we can make a stance on. Are they gonna finish with a winning record
in the Big 12
overall?
I
mean, they're 9-7 now, and they've had kind of not the easier part of the schedule. They played number 10 and number 1, but
you know, I would have to say no.
I know. Like, the Big 12 has to be harder than their non-con, and they
would have to
be 5 losses in the non-con.
They'd have to be 2 games above 500 in the conference the rest of the way to get to 500. So 3 games. Oh man, I don't think so. Not based on what we've seen.
I know.
Not based on what we've seen.
And that's the point that I brought up to yesterday to the K-Stater in the newsroom, is that, like, listen, this is a team that obviously is a completely different team, not the same players, but Jerome Tang found a way to take that group last year that, you know, you can make an argument that was worse than this team this year, and they rattled off 7 straight wins against teams they had no business beating. And so there's no doubt in my mind they're going to upset somebody, and maybe a couple times they'll upset people, but man, they're going to lose a lot of games that they should win.
Yeah. So, you know, they didn't finish above 500 last year, like you said. They haven't finished above 500 in the Big 12 since Jerome Tang's first year, the Magic Elite Eight run. They've finished tied for 9th place in the league each of the last 2 years, and they're off to probably a worse start than that this year. This can be tough. It's going to be tough. They're going to have to do something special. There are a lot of uncomfortable conversations right now around college basketball in this area. Bill Self having to answer a lot of tough questions right now with KU. That will be an interesting discussion today and throughout the week. It's an uncomfortable time right now around college basketball for us, because there's just a lot of questions.
Is there something to be said that I joined Sports Daily and all this happened? Like, I joined Sports Daily when the Chiefs were one of the best teams in football. Mm-hmm. And then I took on full time, and then it's boom, missed the playoff.
I'm not sure you need to reevaluate some things in life, but you might need to reevaluate some things.
I might need to. I don't know if I'm, like, doing some voodoo stuff wrong, if I need to be, you know, making phone calls to people? I'm not sure.
KU is home tomorrow night in the, you know, the late window against Iowa State. And K-State is in action Wednesday.
Did you see? We got it. I want to bring this up. You see K-State's schedule this week? You see what their Saturday game is? At Oklahoma State. At Oklahoma State at 9 p.m.
What? Is it a weird network?
I don't know. But it's at 9 p.m.
Goodness. The Shockers don't play till Thursday. 9 p.m.?
Oh, there is a chance. Goodness. If you go to that game, you may not get to your car until midnight.
Oof. And what? It's in Stillwater?
Yes.
I don't know about
I always pencil down all the Stillwater games or all the Norman games back just when they were kids. It's like, it's drivable. We can go do it. I'm like, all right, when's K-State go play them? Like, all right, January 17th at 9 o'clock. I'm not going to that if you paid me $1,000.
Gross. Yeah, gross. No, we'll have to deal with that. We got an NFL playoff game tonight, Texans-Steelers. What'd you make that wild card round?
Pretty good. Just about every single game was pretty good.
Pretty good. The game last night wasn't good, I wouldn't say, but it was tight most of the game at least. I mean, you kidding me with some of these games? The Rams, the Bears. What was the – they put it up yesterday. It was during the Niners-Eagles game. And it was when the Eagles had the ball with 2 minutes left. And I think, don't quote me on this, and I watched all these games, so I should just be able to rattle this off. But, you know, it's a weekend, so you're kind of in and out. But I'm pretty sure it's that at that point, every team that won was trailing with 2 minutes left to go in the game.
Oh, man. Yeah, that's probably true.
And so I was just like, that's stupid. Like, that's ridiculous.
Nuts.
God, it was good. It was so good. And I got, you know, yesterday we had my son and I had the Bills Jags finish, you know, on the phone while we're watching the Shockers game is like in the little cup holder. Man, just it doesn't quit being awesome. And like, who are you picking right now?
I don't like, know.
Based on what we've seen thus far, who do you feel honestly, good about? You'd probably say the Niners, but the Niners lost Kittle.
Exactly. That's exactly what I was going to say is that like, man, they were the team. It's just like, I don't know how they're so good, but they are. And they beat people and like they could win a Super Bowl. And it's like, well, now their favorite target's not going to play the rest of the playoffs. I don't know.
I said the Rams going in, but the Rams narrowly escaped.
I feel awful about the Rams.
I will say, though, remember the Panthers beat them. Maybe Carolina just has something on them. Like maybe Carolina just had figured something out about them that nobody else could, because if you step away from that one, well, Seattle beat them in overtime, but they were, you know, they were humming other than that game pretty much since October. They took Seattle. That was the overtime game, that incredible game. And remember, that was Seattle coming back in the wildest fashion. So I think I still feel okay about the Rams. But again, yeah, you were 10-point favorites and just barely won that game. I don't know. We'll discuss it next. What are our favorite stories? And there's still another game to play tonight. We got a lot of college basketball talk. Again, Paul Mills later this hour. KU fans, we got to have a conversation about the Jayhawks. So we'll bounce around a little bit here this morning. Don't go anywhere. It's Sports Daily. It's Albrock and Cleland. On a Monday.
Dude, you gotta hear this.
Go ahead. I think I want to hear this.
Sports Daily is on KFH.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. It is Sports Daily. Glad to be here with you on a Monday, a busy Monday. Thanks to Crestview Country Club for being a great supporter of the program. It's golf weather. I don't know what else to say. It's golf weather out there. If you want access to 36 holes of golf, maybe you can play 18. Maybe you can play 4. Doesn't matter. Out of Crestview Country Club, you play when you can. Give them a call. Good time of year to join. Best deals on memberships. All different kinds of memberships for you. Tell them we sent you here from Sports Daily. We come back in, TJ. Sunday Night Football was the least entertaining game of the weekend's games, right? 16-3. The Chargers couldn't get anything going. The Patriots defense maxes Patriots, holds true. It's kind of a Patriots D and Drake May show, and has been all year. And they looked really good in that game. We've got one more tonight, Texans and Steelers. The Bills topple the Jags, 27-24, comeback win. 49ers beat the Eagles, 23-19, comeback win in the second half, not quite as dramatically. Rams come back late to beat the Panthers, 34-31. Bears, you want to talk about comebacks, outscore the Packers 28-6 in the second half to win 31-27. All the games entertaining, the NFL playoffs deliver.
They do. It's, in a year where it's the weirdest that I can remember, mostly because the Chiefs aren't in it is why I'd probably say that, but the weirdest that a lot of people can remember in recent history, that really having no idea who's going to win the championship, like, that's to a T. The microcosm of the weekend is what we've seen all season, basically.
It's hard not to default to the Bills for me in the AFC, because it's Josh Allen, and even though I do think this is his worst team, well, it's a very different team than we're used to him walking into the playoffs with. That's a really impressive win to go to Jacksonville and get that win. He came up hobbled twice in that game. The Bills are just, they're different this year. They run the ball like crazy, and they play okay defense. I mean, they're not like a juggernaut. They try to control it through the run game. That's what they do. And they're down running backs, and we'll see.
It feels like for them, it's the season where, you know, it's not the Bills, as you said, and it's not as, you know, high-powered of an offense as we've seen in the past. And so you watch them play yesterday, you watch them play all season, whatever you want to say. Like, you watch them, and you're like, is this team good enough to go to a Super Bowl? Like, I have no idea. And, like, they win games, though. That's the thing.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're good enough to go to the Super Bowl because they have Josh Allen, and it's just not very clear to us who is, right? You know, of the teams, man, in the AFC right now, I think that you look at the Patriots, and it's hard not to get behind it. We just haven't seen it before, right? That's the only thing holding them back, right? They played kind of a soft schedule, and we're just not used to it. We're not used to it. We're not used to it with them. We're not used to it with the Bears, who came back. Look at those two young quarterbacks on display a little bit there. You're going to get Bo Nix out of that class on display next week. That great class keeps delivering. Who's to say that Nix or May can't go to a Super Bowl in their second year? Who's to say, you know, Caleb Williams can't get to a Super Bowl in his second year? These quarterbacks are very good. We're seeing it. We just haven't seen it before. So it's hard to retrain our brains for it. We'd seen Jalen Hurts. We've seen Josh Allen. We've seen Matt Stafford, right? We know Aaron Rodgers. We know, to a lesser degree, CJ Stroud. So we know some of this stuff. But with these newer teams and newer quarterbacks, I think it's just hard to retrain our brains a little bit. I got to tell you, like, my favorite story out of all of this is Caleb Williams. Like, the way Caleb Williams carries himself now, and the way he is so clearly matured as a pro, right, into this year, listening to him talk, he's a totally different person. And I think it's benefiting. I don't know if that's a credit to Ben Johnson. I don't know if that's a credit to just, you know, getting a little older like most of us do.
but he looks awesome. He's saying the right things. I think his story's been fantastic this year. Y'all forgot about him.
It's true. I thought you were about to bring up your favorite postseason argument that drives me bonkers, is saying that you can't win a Super Bowl without a Hall of Fame quarterback, even though winning Super Bowls makes you a Hall of Fame quarterback. Will Drake make it win a Super Bowl? I don't know if he's a Hall of Fame quarterback yet.
These guys are young. That's before the end of that. Matt Stafford's not won yet. Russell Wilson's not won yet.
Yeah, I know.
You go find me a bunch of them, because it's like Brad Johnson, Trent Dilfer, and that's it.
I know, but it's
Flacco, those three.
I know, but let me tell you, winning a Super Bowl helps your Hall of Fame case if those guys didn't win Super Bowls.
I don't understand what you're arguing against. Of course it does.
Say that you have to have a Hall of Fame quarterback to win a Super Bowl, but also winning a Super Bowl makes you a Hall of Fame quarterback. It's the inverse of itself.
That's right. So you gotta be able to win a Super
Bowl. But the Giants won a Super Bowl with Eli Manning. Would Eli Manning be a Hall of Famer if he didn't win Super Bowls?
Would Tom Brady be a Hall of Famer if he didn't win Super Bowls?
Yes. Look at the stats that he posted.
Of course they're Hall of Famers because they won Super Bowls. But what your average run of the mill quarterbacks in this league don't win Super Bowls most of the time, about 90% of the time.
Yeah.
That's what it takes. That has to be your trajectory, or you ain't going to get there. Look at Philip Rivers, the Hall of Fame quarterback that didn't win one, right? There's lots of great quarterbacks that don't win one.
It's true.
It's a tough thing. Jalen Hurts may not be a Hall of Fame quarterback by the time it's all said and done.
But winning a Super Bowl helps him.
Yeah, he's been to two. So maybe. And he runs the ball at a tick we haven't really seen. So that's a part of it. And who's to say Caleb Williams and Drake May aren't going to be Hall of Fame quarterbacks? That's my point now, is they might very well be at that level. We just don't know yet. You know, we look back at these guys and say, oh, okay, yeah. And we see, Patrick Mahomes in his second year as a starter won a Super Bowl. Why can't one of these three, win a Super Bowl? They for sure can. But I don't think we're ready to, we're not ready, we're not, this is hard. We haven't seen it before. So we're like Rams, yeah, totally can see it. Bills, totally, yes, absolutely could happen. Niners, they've been to lots of Super Bowls recently. Yeah, they could do it. Okay. I don't know what I want here out of the playoffs at this point. I don't know if I want one of these young guys to do it. I don't know if I want, if there was a time I wanted Josh Allen to do it, where it's like, just give it to Josh Allen. He's been so awesome. Let's just get him his Super Bowl.
What's the most chaos scenario it could be? That it's just like those teams are in a Super Bowl.
Oh,
it's the Bears, right? The Bears and who?
I mean, they're the two seed.
Yeah, but still, in the last decade, it's like, wow.
Chaos scenario is probably Texans. Yeah, I guess Bears.
I know. The Texans are the least notable team of the last.
Well, I mean, Texans are favored tonight on the road.
I'm not saying that. I'm saying more so the fact of when you look at the logos, it's like they won a Super Bowl. Wow. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It would have been the Jags. I mean, it's been my lifetime. The Bears. It's been my lifetime. 85. Right. The Steelers are the least likely.
Yes.
But by the time you got there, it'd be like, oh, it's Rodgers, right? Oh, it's Rodgers. And it's they're the worst team in this group. I don't even think it's particularly close. And they could win tonight. They're at home. Of course they could win tonight. They're at home playing an offense that's been pedestrian. You get lucky on 2-3 big plays and you could win that game.
They don't usually play the Monday night playoff game, do they?
People have asked me that. I don't know. I think they have before. I like that they are.
I told a bunch of people last week. Yeah,
the Texans the Texans or the Steelers will go on short rest.
Yeah, it's true. That's what I told a lot. I told a lot of people. I'm like, nope, there's no more Monday Night Football the rest of the year. And then the schedule came out and I said, never mind, I was wrong. There's Monday Night Football.
Yeah, there's three. I say that, though. There's three games and one more to come. So the divisional round is usually where you'll get NBC will probably get a game. I mean, they might play one of them on Monday night next week. Play one Saturday, two Sunday, one Monday. Maybe. I don't think they will.
I doubt they'd put it.
Oh, no, they won't, because the national championship.
Oh, yeah. Night.
So somebody's just going to get the short end of the stick and play on a short week. But The flip side of it is you had a long week this last week, but both teams had a long week. Now you go into next week, you're going to play somebody who had one extra day to prepare. That's probably why we don't usually see that. Usually they'll just put the ESPN game or ABC game on like Saturday. So this may be the first time. I don't remember. But it's fine. I'm glad we have it now because I'm glad it's on tonight. It doesn't hurt my feelings. Texans Steelers, one of the, I don't know, what had less fanfare coming into it, you think? Texans Steelers or Chargers Patriots? If we'd have gone back to like week 8 and said these are going to be two playoff games.
I mean, Texans Steelers, I guess. Like,
yeah, I mean, the Patriots were good. We thought the Chargers
were the Texans. Yeah, the Texans, like, Texans weren't in the playoffs at all in week 8. Like, they clawed out of hell.
Yeah. Right. And sorry, Max asked, by the way, real quick, Max asked, is Jim McMahon a Hall of Fame quarterback? That case I'm talking about, Max, doesn't go that far back. It goes back to Troy Aikman is how far. So it's like 35, I think, years or so, 30, maybe it's 30 years, whatever it is. It's back to that last Aikman Super Bowl, just on how heavily weighted quarterback has been in the NFL. Now, the craziest part about it is how many of them Brady and Mahomes have won collectively. Like, you've had these dynastic runs, which have taken up almost half of that time. That's what made this year a little crazier when you start to go through some of those, like, no Mahomes, no Brady for the first time since, right? That's where you were just like, whoa, like, those two have dominated back to back. It's just so weird because it took so long to get to Brady to be able to do that. And then Mahomes started a trajectory just like Brady's. And you're like, well, maybe it's not that rare. But so, yeah, it doesn't go back to McMahon. I haven't taken it actually back that far. Rick says it's the fourth year or so that they've had a wild card game on Monday. I'll take your word for it, Rick. I honestly don't remember.
I have no idea.
To go back and look. But I know the
Chiefs haven't played on a Monday on a wild card round. The Chiefs
all it's probably the wild card round, and then it doesn't happen in the division round. But I do think ABC still gets a game in the divisional round. Typically, the divisional round is like the round that can't miss. The wild card round delivered like crazy, and we still have one to go. It's usually the divisional round where you just are like, this is insane.
That's what I'm saying. Right, like, now. this year, real, like, because you have no idea who's good. And we've said that since like week 4 of like, who's the best team in football? Nobody knows. And now we're in the wild card round and still nobody knows the answer to that question because every team has flawed. Like, every team has shown you struggles of one way or another. And now you can make the case that it might be the Patriots because they haven't shown you that much struggle. But they also, then you go back to the, the schedule, obviously. Sorry, excuse me. The schedule from the season is their biggest flaw. How long can they keep riding that? And, you know, they beat the Chargers who were beat up. And, you know, it keeps going into the divisional round. So, I don't know. I still don't know who the best team in football is. I don't know who the top two best teams in football
are. Well, look, I don't think we picked, after they got reseeded into the playoffs, I don't think we, like, picked a Super Bowl. For me, it was Rams Bills. Very just like, just felt like a lazy take to take the Rams and the Bills. So, you know, it's like, I don't know, the Rams and the Bills, that doesn't feel awful right now. It feels all right. I think that's probably who I'd stick with. If we reseeded again into the divisional round, I'd probably stick with it.
I have no idea. I'd pick, like, as crazy as it is, I think I'd pick like Patriots Bears.
Nobody has any idea, by the way.
I know.
Like, that's awesome. That makes this more fun.
I agree. Like, if you, after tonight, especially, like, once we see a winner from tonight, like, you could ask 100 people, I think, and you may have a split, like, whatever, 10% for each pairing it could be, because it's just like, I have no idea. There's not going to be a clear in a way. It's 70% said Rams Bills.
And back to the class of last year, because, yeah, it could totally be Patriots Bills. I think the Bears are a little, I think the Bears are going to have to, I think they're going to have to outplay their ability to get there. I do. I think the comeback was incredible, but they needed a 25 point comeback in the second half.
I agree.
So
they got flaws.
But you remember, like, Jaden Daniels last year, like, that class, it delivered with Daniels as a rookie, and now three of them are going to make it into the divisional round the next year. Three different ones, by the way. And that is wild stuff. One other storyline yesterday that's making its run. I don't know, Max, did you get this from TJ? So after the Jaguars blew the game to the Bills, Liam Cohen was lobbed some softball. I don't even know if there's softballs in post game. Do you have the sound, Max?
Yeah.
Okay, let's play it and then we'll react to it for just a minute here.
Hold on. It's on X. So hold on.
Okay. Max is getting there. You tell us where you got it, Max. So the Jags blow the lead to the Bills. And after the game, Liam Cohen, who's done a remarkable job in Jacksonville, if we're all being honest, from 3 wins to 13 wins, he gets into the post game. And this is one of my least favorite things that happens. Not what was done. What was done is what it is. But after what it's done, we'll talk about that. Okay. So here it is. Here's the audio.
How you doing today? Lynn Jones, Jacksonville Free Press News. I just want to tell you congratulations on your success, young man.
Thank you.
Hold your head up, all right? You guys have had a most magnificent season.
Thank you.
You did a great job out there today.
Appreciate
so you
it.
Just hold your head up, okay?
Thank
and
you,
ladies
ma'am.
And gentlemen, Duval, you the one, all
Thank
right?
You, ma'am.
You keep it going. We got another season, okay?
I appreciate
Take
it.
Take care and much continued success to you and the entire team.
Thank you, ma'am.
Yeah, so that's Lynn Jones. I don't know anything about Lynn Jones. Nobody does before yesterday. Nobody here. She works for a news outlet of some kind. Clearly isn't on the Jaguars beat regularly in a post game. But that's, listen, that's not the place for that. But now everybody's got to, like, this is one of those things. Everybody's got to take a stand. Is this okay or it's not okay? Like, you're going to get lectured by reporters and, like, I'm like, come on, guys.
This is the stance that, like, this, two things could be true is the biggest thing that I've seen from this. One, that's awesome. The fact that, you know, a coach was told that and, like, had to take a step back from football and hear that from somebody is pretty cool. And I can agree with people about that. The fact that it happened in the middle of a press conference, and I listened back, that was the third question.
Oh,
like, there was 5 more minutes after that. If that was the last thing, as he's walking away, if you want to just say, like, hey, coach, I just wanted to say, like, you know what I mean? Like, that's a little more, you know, but, like, they interrupted this middle of a press conference to say that. It wasn't a question. The other part of this, if you wanted to say all that stuff and then say, as you reflect back, what was this season like? Like, that's another thing. But the fact of the matter is the press conferences are a place where questions are asked. And now people on social media are saying the only people that are pissed about this are reporters. And that's why reporters are the worst people on the earth. Like, I don't know.
It's fine. Like, this is, I don't think she's on the regular sports beat. Yeah. So if she loves that community and reports on it that way, then yeah, he's been a major impact. He's been a major positive impact on the community. You say it to the side. And here's the thing that is annoying is, like, all the grandstanding of, like, that's not the place. And it's not, but who cares? Yeah. Right. It's that you do have limited amounts of time. And, like, when your job is to find compelling things to talk about, and this is probably it for a while. Like, you need those moments. You need, every moment is precious of those moments. So it's like, you're just sitting there like, all right.
This is the biggest thing that I take away from it is that, like, it's not that big of a deal. The fact that it's made its way viral because, like, Adam Schefter is saying that it's awesome. My mind immediately goes to, like, well, then everybody's going to try to do this and it's going to become an every press conference. And then it's like,
true.
This is the slipperiest slope. Like, what are we going to turn these things into?
Yeah, you just, it's fine. Look,
it's
things,
not that big of a deal.
We are joined now by Wichita State head men's basketball coach Paul Mills. As the Shockers get a 78-67 win over North Texas last night. Nice 11-point home win, a nice bounce-back win for the Shocks. And, Coach, it was I don't know how you guys felt about it after the game, and I haven't heard, you know, the post-game reaction, but that seemed inspired to me, which has to be good timing, right? It was a tough loss earlier in the week, but, man, you guys bounced back, and those guys brought the energy defensively, at least to my eyes yesterday. How did you guys feel about it?
Jacob, TJ, can y'all hear me okay?
We gotcha.
Good. Good morning. I felt like we, you know, you have to respond, and I felt like we did that. There was defensive energy. It wasn't the most aesthetically pleasing basketball game given the 18 turnovers, but, you know, knowing that was a top 35 defensive team in the country, to be able to convert 51% of your opportunities. The reason that they're good defensively is that they turned you over. And so there were segments, there were moments that the spacing, the ball handling, the passing wasn't what it needed to be, but we were able to give ourselves a chance just defensively. because we were able to contain two really good players in David Terrell and Jayshon Stevenson.
Yeah, defense played great. The biggest story the fans in the arena took away was obviously Kenyon Giles, 33 points. I kind of cherry-picked this stat. I'll put my hand up on that. But in the last 20 years, Shockers to score 32 points is Cleanthony Early, Fred Van Vliet, Marcus McDuffie, and Kenyon Giles. That kind of says the level of score that he is. And whenever he plays like he did yesterday, you know, 33, he could go even more than that, I imagine.
Yeah, I hadn't heard that one, TJ. That's a good company to be in. But, you know, he is a dynamic scorer, has the ability to finish at the rim, shoot the long ball, has all three levels, can go to his middle game, can play off the ball, can play on it. I thought, you know, give North Texas credit. They kind of took him out. And so he was just really efficient. I mean, 13 of 16 from the field. You're not going to be able to do that every night. But even with his limited touches, I say limited, 16 shots is probably what he needs to be around, somewhere between the 15 and 20 mark every game. But I didn't feel like anything was forced. Was really proud. I know the fans were booing multiple times. Will Berg got the ball around the rim. And I thought both of those decisions by Will Berg were great. The one in the first half that was thrown behind him. And then the one with 90 seconds to play. I didn't think Will had a layup and showed poise. But if you remember, we get it to Caron Boyd. He goes and gets a paint touch. We kick it out to Kenyon Giles and he's able to drain a three. And just thought that level of patience that everybody showed, the entire team showed, is kind of some progress that we've been able to make in the last week.
Running clock to Will Berg's defense in the second half one was not a bad option either. So Giles goes 33. I'm curious, when you guys are seeing him in his groove like that, are you encouraging him when he's got a hot hand, like, hey, shoot more? And because it feels like the team can sense it and feel it a little bit.
Yeah, I think that's probably more of it than anything else is that the others sense it. And so you have to, I mean, it's a fine line. You can just start shooting just to shoot. Hey, I made three in a row and it's the shot fallacy. Well, if I make three in a row, I'm going to make four in a row. Not if you're taking bad ones. And then you also get in this tension to where the other team's just looking for one guy. And there's other opportunities created for those other four guys. And some of the gravity that KG creates because we're able to go downhill because people are paying such attention to him. Like, we need to be able to take advantage of that. So it's why basketball isn't a science, it's an art. And I think that, you know, as the more and more the players are around each other, in my opinion, like, we're right at the halfway mark, 17 games, you know, you're guaranteed 31. And then, you know, hopefully you're getting more in the conference tournament, NCAA tournament. But I think as you go through this process, you just see more and more of a learning curve and you see players adapting to it.
Coach, you talked about after the Rice loss, there was some struggles of finishing inside, getting the looks that you kind of wanted inside more so than finishing, I imagine. The one thing that I kind of took away comparing box scores is against Rice, you guys shoot 22 threes. Against North Texas, you shoot 11, and it felt like you were kind of getting more of the looks inside that you were looking for. Was there an emphasis change potentially, or did it kind of just better looks come inside the paint this time?
Yeah, I would just tell you that's what the other teams were giving you, right? We only shot four threes there in the first half yesterday against North Texas, and you can see it was a really concerted effort, not only to run guys off the line, but not give guys looks. And so what it did was open up the court, and the spacing allowed other players to go one-on-one. And we have a good one-on-one player in Kenyon Giles, and he was able to make shots. And then at the same time, his ability, because of his touch, it allows us to offensive rebound. And, you know, you have a dynamic offensive rebounder in Will Berg. Emmanuel Okorafor is good. Caron Boyd is elite. You know, Dylan did a good job yesterday. TJ Williams. And it's why we're top 10 in the country at being able to do that. But you have to have somebody who can generate those shots in order for those shots to fall off around the rim. and that's what KG does. But I thought it was more that's what they were giving us, and because that's what they were giving us, we were able to utilize that to our advantage.
You mentioned TJ Williams. Do you anticipate with the long week, the long time off, that he will be ready to go for the road trip this week?
Yeah, he's been cleared. We'll put him through some physical test today, and he'll probably be back with us at practice tomorrow. But feel good about him being able to go Thursday. Yesterday, you know, we were down to 9 available players. We only played 8 just because Noah didn't get any minutes yesterday. But it'll be good to at least have a 10-man rotation as you go into this road trip.
Coach, we're looking ahead to those games. You've got 2 on the road. They're both in Florida. They're 2 good teams in the league. You know, combined 5-2, I believe, out to start their conference play as well. You get them on the road. You guys have, you know, you've looked good on the road at times. How do you approach a long week this week to get ready, which will then, of course, turn into a short time between those games Thursday, Sunday?
Well, I'm not a big fan of this, but they make us give players days off. I think coaches are smart enough to know if you're doing too much and you're sabotaging your team by, hey, we're going to go practice for 11 hours today, guys, and then we expect you to be ready. But I would like to just sit down with our guys and, like, review some film for 45 minutes individually. But all that to say, they got a day off. Kenyon Giles playing 40 minutes probably needs it. And so we'll go through, and then, guys, we don't start school till next week. So I'm more of a morning person. You know, TJ's mentioned it before. I was rocking and rolling by 3:57 this morning. Like, I'm up around 3:30, but it usually takes me about 20 minutes. So I would prefer to go. We usually practice at 10 a.m. That's a little late. I feel like it's 3 o'clock in the afternoon some days. But for the players, they're just waking up. And so we practice at 10. We'll do the same thing on Wednesday, catch a flight to Florida. And then I think it's at 9 p.m. Eastern time, 8 p.m. Central time. So that's more than enough time to kind of recuperate and make sure we can throw quality punches on Thursday night.
Coach, it's that new artery pumping blood for you at 3 in the morning. It gets you wanting to get out of bed, probably.
Well, I will tell you, there's a difference between blood flow and no blood flow, and you do have a little bit more energy.
I could believe that. You talked a little bit after the game. Obviously, you dropped the one in Charlotte. You dropped the one on Wednesday against Rice. You know, the message after that of losing 2 games that you kind of had right there at the end of the game to be able to bounce back against North Texas, you know, I know that there's a lot of talk about, you know, winning isn't natural. You say that a lot. You know, what was the message to get them to bounce back?
Yeah, you just can't get caught up. Everybody goes through the ebbs and flows of a season. If you haven't gone through it yet as a team, you will. And you're going to have these moments. You know, it's just I do not do well with players that just think everything's going to be perfect. Players who go into all this drama after a missed shot, like I just like that will set me off. And I'll usually they'll hear me on that one in practice. This whole idea that you're going to make every shot and we're going to act like we're 6 years old and we didn't get our macaroni and cheese today. And like that stuff really bothers me. So you just encourage players. We're not going to ride this wave. We understand that from an outside perspective, people that hey, you're up this amount. We think you should win the game. And it's true. We believe we should win the game, but it's we're not going to ride the ebbs and flows of it. You need to understand that it's a part of it. And what you can't do is let one mistake lead to 2. And then you just can't allow this whole process of multiple mistakes just adding up. And I just thought how we handled, you know, what was a 17-point lead at around the 13-minute mark gets all the way down to 6. And I just thought we handled that well. Obviously, being at home helps. We need to be able to handle that on the road as well.
That's been a theme. Yeah, it's you know, people ask me, they ask us our thoughts on the Shockers all the time, and it's like, I tell you, like, they seem engaged, and we've all seen basketball teams where that stuff has snowballed. Maybe it's this is an older group, I don't know, but it doesn't seem, at least from us to the outside, that they've let anything really shake them for longer than a game this year.
Yeah, I mean, I just really encourage our guys to prevent distractions. I, you know, one of the first people I met with when I took the job here was Craig Porter, and he just said, just watch out for the outside noise, he says, because it can seep into the locker room. And so I think I have a group that just doesn't pay attention to the outside noise. I don't want to get too biblical here, but there's a story in the Torah of Nehemiah, and Nehemiah is building a wall and he's doing a great job. And the outside people come in to cause distractions. And he says, I'm doing a good work. I'm not stopping. And so I just listen, guys, we're doing good work. We're not going to stop what we're doing. And I think with teenagers, sometimes they can get focused on that. And we had two seniors on our team, and Karam Boyd and Kenyon Giles. That's why they play so much. But I will tell you, I think this group has done a good job of, however the game goes, good or bad, let's move on to the next thing.
Yeah, we see it too. Two games this week, both on the road, both nationally televised. You'll hear them both over on KEYN. Coach, good luck, safe travels, get home safely, and we'll see you next week.
Gentlemen, thank you.
Here goes Paul Mills, Wichita State head men's basketball coach. We're right up against it. We'll take a quick break. Right back with more Sports Daily. All right, welcome back in, everybody. It is Sports Daily here on KFH. Jacob Albrock, TJ Cleland with you on a Monday, Reaction Monday. Thanks to Paul Mills for stopping by there for a few minutes to chat about the Shockers' win on Sunday. Pretty big win. We'll react to that in just a second here. We've got more football conversations. We'll get to the KU conversations, K-State from over the weekend, and hoops as well. It's all What's on Tap, brought to you by Wichita Brewing Company. Now featuring chili for a limited time. Hearty beef, no bean chili, perfect for lunch, and now available at all three WBC locations, East, West, and Historic Delano. Wichita Brewing Company, pizza and beer made here. Welcome back in, everybody. Good stuff there, I think, from Mills, TJ. Look, what was the list of attendance last night? Because that was the biggest crowd, 5,500. That felt a little bigger than a lot of them. Maybe it wasn't. It's a little higher than the one earlier in the week. But I do think there's still some interest, and it's an interesting team. It's a team, I think, that, like, has anything that you've seen changed your belief that they can beat anybody in the league? Because I think they clearly can, but they can also lose to Rice. And yeah. So it's like, okay, what does that mean for this regular season? Because the end hasn't changed. They're going to have to win the conference tournament. You just want them to be playing the best basketball. But they, you know, that was a good game yesterday. They too many inbound turnovers, and Coach Mills brought that. I didn't realize North Texas was that good at forcing turnovers. Still, yeah. Some of those you're like, come on, man. Like, we can't do that.
Yeah, I mean, it's a big bounce back in a spot where they kind of needed to have it. You know, the thing about the question you asked, it's a good question. They, a month ago, they were a team that you felt like could probably beat anybody in the league. And now you still kind of feel that, but I think it's also just because you know that the league is just not very good. And the league beats up on each other. Like, Tulsa was the team that was like, man, run this table. They're really good this year. They've lost two games already. They've got the same record as the Shockers. So it's like, it's good because everything's still on the table if they want to, you know, make a run at this thing. And I know last week that we were sitting here talking about how the sky is falling, and losses to Rice will do that, and I understand. So it's a, you know, you got to take care of business and the ones that you can get. If they can go 2-0 on this road trip and come back, then I think that it'll be like, okay, it was a fluke. They lost to Rice, and it sucks they lost to Sharp.
And I don't want to be – I want to be real. Like, with the league, it's hard for me to sit here and say the league's bad, and I say that, and I probably have said it here. I do say it. I don't know what, like, compared to what, right? Is it that's where I have to be fair.
I mean, bad, I think
is compared, bad compared probably to past, isn't the right word. There's just not one or two dominant teams in it this year.
I mean, it's, right? I mean, you compare it to the American Conference year over year. Like, the American has been a two-bid league every year except last year, the last, I mean, probably five. I don't know off the top of my head. But, I mean, they typically have two. Sometimes they have three. Like, it was a good league a couple of years ago. And this year, there's no way it's going to be more than a one big league, unfortunately. Right, and it's because so it,
I think that's what I'm. That's what I'm. That's what I mean. Like, is it? It's just not like there's not a couple of dominant teams like we've seen in some years. Does that mean top to bottom the league is bad? I don't know that because I haven't seen too many of these teams play. Does it mean that the league feels a little more wide open than normal? Yes, it does. And I mean, they don't
To be fair, whenever they had the two dominant teams, the bottom of the league was Wichita State. Like, that's where.
This isn't a conference. I'm not talking about the Shockers' role in the league. I'm talking about the league in and of itself. Yeah. I don't know that is the league stronger, you know, 6 through 10, but weaker 1 and 2. Like, those are the kinds of things where, like, I think we got to see that play out over a little bit of time. But it is an opportunistic year for the Shockers for that reason. There's nobody obvious sitting at the top where you're like, oh, they're more talented. I mean, are you dead set right now that anybody's more talented than the Shockers in the league? Not based on what we've seen, right? But I haven't seen Tulane play yet. I don't think I have. And they're at the top of the league right now. We haven't seen really anything out of Temple. We're going to see South Florida and Florida Atlantic. That'll be a great look. Tulsa looked like it was going to be maybe that kind of year, and they've lost a couple of conference games in a row. So I think we got to give that time, but whatever the case is, it's going to be a one-bid league. That's it. It's going to be the team that wins the tournament is in. That's it. We know that now. So what is the Shockers' chance to get there? I think it becomes the question. And I don't think that chance has changed. And until they give us some psychological look, like that they're going to let a Rice loss that they shouldn't have lost. That's a terrible loss that you can't, but it doesn't roll into the next game.
No. So,
okay. Well, then in that case, all's good. And that's just have to be the way it is. And have we seen the best of the Shockers? I don't know that we have. I hope we haven't. I think we've seen it in spurts, but I don't think we've seen the best of the Shockers. This isn't North Texas of a few years ago. North Texas is okay this year. But in a down year, like, this is the opportunity. I still think this is Paul Mills' best roster since he's been here. I do. Yeah. I believe.
I mean, the best way to look at this so far, they've played 4 games in conference play, and were they the favorite in every one of them? They may not have been against UAB. Were they favorite against UAB?
They were, and they should have won them all. Were they against UAB?
It was a pick 'em, if not.
It was real
anyways. Close. They were favored the last 3 games, basically. They were favored in 2 games that they lost, and they were favored by 8.5 against North Texas, which I couldn't believe the line, but it was right. You know, they covered that number. So, I agree. I mean, I think that this week is the – I'll say this. That win last night, like, it's so – and he's completely right, and that's not coach speak. It's so easy for them to turn one loss into two, and it's what we've seen the last 2 years that they've done. That they had turned one loss into 2 losses into 7 losses in conference play. You know, like they've rattled off losing streaks. Like, that was, to me, the biggest thing. It's just like, man, if they can lose to Rice at home, they could lose to anybody. And for them to like quickly be like, okay, like we're going to play the best defense that we've played in a while and have efficient offense and beat a good defensive team. Like, that shows me that it's like, okay, like I'm not going to let my mind go to that place yet, because they've shown you that they can snap out of that and still compete in this league.
They better compete the rest of the way. I mean, I hope this is what happens. I hope we get to March and we roll around and we're looking at it and we're like, all right, they should win this conference tournament. That's what I hope happens, because it'll mean they're consistent enough to give us that feeling. That's what I suppose we could gather. I think finishing up high in the conference standings, even though this is a year where that won't mean all that much, it won't. Like, I don't think we're going to get to a situation where we're looking at seeding as being something like you gotta try to miss Memphis, right? Like we've had in some of these other years. Like, all that matters is that they're playing well, and I still don't know what needs to happen to avoid the stretch of game which is, I think, happened in every game. Have they had one where it didn't, where you're just like, come on, like this cannot be happening again? It happened yesterday.
I mean, it's true. That's the one thing we haven't talked about yet is that, like, those final 5 minutes of the game is just like, oh my gosh, it's going to happen. They're going to blow this lead. It's going to happen. And they held on, and that three by Giles that he was referencing was a really big point in the game to let them not come back. But it has happened every single game to no lead is safe either way. You know, they did it against UAB from the opposite side. They were down by 16 points and came back. And so it's just they're a team full of runs, basically. And every team is, but they really have shown you that is going to happen every game.
And it had, yeah, the key, like, how do you become a team that limits the negative run? That's the ticket for them. But if you want to miss, if you missed anything and want to go back and listen to the Paul Mills conversation, you can do that right now on the Odyssey app. Maybe not right now. Give Max a minute to podcast the show out later today. How about that? We will still talk KU. We will still talk K-State today. KU's coming up next. I'm not real sure how to even handle the KU conversation, to be perfectly honest with you.
I'm gonna guess it's gonna have to deal with the freshman.
Yeah, he'll be involved in that conversation. Yeah. I would say. I'd say that's a safe bet.
All roads always lead to Darren Peterson talk.
They do, and they should. That's what happens when you have the number one player in the country. It's what happens when you have a dude that can sneeze 30 points. That's what it is. Like, what about the rest? We make it about Peterson, which is so funny, but like what accountability for anybody else on the team. Like, you know, there's five dudes out there.
Fun experiment. I want the listeners to ponder with this thought and chew it around a little bit, because I have been. As the current three basketball teams in the state of Kansas sit, nobody feels great about any of the three, I don't think. Like, if you put them in a round robin tournament and had them all each play each other, is there a chance that everybody goes 1-1?
I don't think so. I think KU'd probably go 2-0, but maybe not. I guess it depends on
I asked somebody at work yesterday, and they said, is Darren Peterson going to play? Because if he does, I may feel worse about KU's chances, which is a crazy way of thinking. Darren Peterson's awesome.
And that is not a unique thought either. There's a lot of people feeling
that. I know.
I don't see it. But we'll, you know what? Let's talk about it next when we come back on Sports Daily. Don't go away.
The commercials are over.
Yo, I haven't got all day.
869-1240.
Time to get busy.
This is Sports Daily on KFH.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. NFL playoff football on KFH tonight. Tune in to 97.5, 1240 KFH at 6 to hear play-by-play NFL action. You will get some Texans Steelers action tonight. Dan Patrick, Jim Rome, recap the weekend, take you up into that game a little later. Welcome back in, Jacob Albrock, TJ Cleland. We're moving to KU now. KU's coming off of a pretty bad one, a loss to West Virginia, an 11 point loss to West Virginia. West Virginia is not bad this year. They're off to a pretty nice start, actually. But still, not one you anticipated KU losing by 11. And the elephant in the room of that is, if you can't go beat West Virginia on the road, who can you go beat on the road?
Did you see Bill Self's comments after the game? It was an all-timer. All-time Bill Self press conference. Shreyas. I think they're both Shreyas sound bites, actually. We'll have to ask him about it on Wednesday. He asked him something about the way the team is meshing together, blah, 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 blah. And he said, yeah, we suck right now.
Okay, yeah, I didn't hear that. I heard that he, with the one where he said the conference was a B.
Yeah, and then Shreyas asked about something about, you know, what the team can do if they can't, you know, basically the question he just asked for the most part. He said, listen, this league's a real B.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's very Bill Self.
So they come home right. For two games this week, Iowa State, Baylor. Here's the reality of the Big 12, though. And this is where I think you can appropriately react as a KU fan of a bit of panic. The top four teams in this league have two combined overall losses, right? Like you go, you look at KU right now, and at 1-2, they're like ninth in the league. Okay. So it's like, okay, well, they've only played three games, right? But if you look at it, I mean, nobody's going to say right now that KU is better than Arizona, Iowa State, BYU, or Houston. Or Tech, let's be honest. So that's five. Okay. UCF already beat them. That's six. West Virginia already beat them. That's seven. They better than Colorado? Yeah, probably. Okay. So that's eight. Is KU the eighth best team in this league? I mean, I don't think that's the case, but I don't necessarily think it's not the case either.
Let me pull this stat out for you. So KenPom obviously runs all their numbers. They do projections of who they think should win each game by what score. This is what they've got so far. A loss on Tuesday against Iowa State, a loss as they host BYU, a loss on the road at Texas Tech, a loss at home to Arizona, a loss on the road at Iowa State, a loss at home against Houston, and a loss on the road at Arizona. That's seven more losses. And that's not far-fetched. I mean, those are all really good teams.
Now, what will happen is they'll win a couple of those. They'll probably lose a couple that they shouldn't.
Correct.
Nothing's coming easy, right? Like, again, West Virginia is not bad, but you look at games in Morgantown, as tough a place as that is to play, and you think, yeah, that's probably a game they ought to win, right?
Yeah. I mean, right now, KenPom has them sitting at a 19-12 record and a 9-9 conference record, which is for, I'll say this, and people probably get pissed at me for this, for K-State standards, that'd be awesome.
Give me the records again.
19-12 and 9-9 is projected record.
19-12 is tough to get in.
That's what I'm saying.
19-12 like, get in the tournament.
That's why I'm like, for a K-State, for a Colorado, for one of the teams like that, like that, they'd be enamored at that they are right now.
If they started the way they started, right. But KU, it will be epically disappointing. If Peterson plays and they like don't make the tournament.
Literally, like that was a topic of conversation after they lost to West Virginia. Is like if this trend continues and they can't beat West Virginia or UCF on the road, like they won't make the tournament. They'll be a bubble team.
Because they can't win all their home games.
Exactly.
Based on what we've seen so far. Right.
Exactly. From what we've seen so far. Like if they miss the tournament, like can you imagine what that will be like if Kansas misses the tournament? Social media would explode. It'd be insane. People might riot on Mass Street.
I don't know what to do. People have already had some pretty uncomfortable conversations. Yeah. If that happens, okay. I don't know what we're supposed to do with any of this. Darren Peterson's the best player in the country. They got Lori Badunga to come back, which was top priority of the offseason.
I know. Like this is the
things. I mean, the parts are good. The sum of the parts has not been good enough consistently. So I'm not sure what to make of it. You know, like are we supposed to be? I still think the ceiling of this team, we haven't even sniffed it yet. And the only way to get there is for Peterson to just be able to go without limitation, which is unreasonable. I still think, boy, like you take him away, which is what a lot of people have said. They're better without him. And I just don't think they are. I think they're limited.
I mean, it's basic.
Get beat around in the Big 12.
There's two arguments. One, if you have a guy that averages 30 points per game, 30 points will help you every time. Two, which Rick brings up, is the argument that everybody else is having, is that when he's on the court, they're not the KU team that we've seen them beat. We've seen them look good with Darren Peterson. We've seen them look good without Darren Peterson. And right now, like, they can't really find the middle ground of what that looks like whenever there's the back and forth, the grift.
What drives me absolutely insane right now is they are scoring enough to win games. 75 points against UCF, 75 points against West Virginia, and what was it, 86 or something in regulation against TCU? Those are totals for the KU team we saw a while back that you would say they would have won all three of those games. I don't know what's happened to the defense, okay, but giving up 81, 87, I think, and 86 in regulation in these three Big 12 games is not okay.
That's true. That's another part of this as well, is that you can say whatever you want about the Darren Peterson stuff and what it does for the offense, because every argument about Darren Peterson is that the offense can't find a way to flow.
And it's not about
offense. They've scored 80 points every single game of conference play.
The offense is fine. That's what I mean.
That's what's more confusing about this.
Now, if you want to say Peterson is making the defense not as good, okay. I don't know. I don't think that's necessarily true, because he's played in a lot of games, but maybe it is. I'm not saying it's not true. I'm saying it's confusing. The offense isn't a problem for KU. They walked into conference play, I think at the time, with the third best defense in the country. And it has looked nothing like that in Big 12 play. Why that is, I'm not sure. How they ever wouldn't be a top-tier defensive team with the size and athleticism they have, being coached by the coach that they're being coached by, that's the part for me that we're watching right now where it just does not make any sense at all. Their offense is fine, and their offense can get better, especially if Peterson's not limited. Like, Council will figure out how to be more aggressive with Peterson on the floor. I'm pretty confident in that. But that, to me, hasn't been the issue. The issue, and we were texting about it this weekend, I'm like, guys, like, what in the hell is West Virginia doing scoring like this on KU? How does this even happen?
I'm with you. That adds to the confusion part of it, because there's not a reason. Like,
West Virginia's not even good on offense.
Yeah.
They're outside the top 80.
There's not a reason, because like that, you can, as I'm saying, what I just said, you can point to things about like, yeah, man, down the stretch, like they need a bucket. And if Darren Peterson's on the bench, like the team has to scramble to figure out who's going to, and like, there's reasons for those things. But the fact that they're giving up so many points on defense, I don't know. I don't know what the issue is. I'm dumbfounded, and I feel like everybody else kind of is too.
And they're about to enter a stretch of games like Iowa State. That's a top 15 offense. They're also really good on defense. They're just really good in general. But, you know, this is a Big 12. Like, if you can't buckle it down, I don't know what to tell. And maybe Peterson has something to do with that. That you could, like, I'll have that conversation. But when they went out to Vegas and we were all like, this seems pretty good. Mm-hmm. They gave up 61, 60, 76 against Tennessee. It's a win. Too many. Tennessee's really good. They come back, UConn. 61 points. Missouri, 60 points. Like, most of the big games they've played up until conference play, they've still been a really good defensive team. I never thought, if we go way back to October or even November, watching this team play, that we'd be sitting here three games into the Big 12 thinking, is this team going to be good enough defensively? I don't know how they're not great defensively every second of every game. It doesn't make any sense based on what we've seen from this exact same team this year at times. And if Peterson has something to do with that, and again, I'm not sure that he does or he doesn't. I don't have a strong feel. We'll ask Shreyas that later in the week. If he's having a negative impact on the defense, then we can have a conversation about something. Because if that's the case, yeah, then this team's a better version of itself when it's an elite defensive team. And it should be an elite defensive team. And I'm not sure why it hasn't been. But if it can be again, then they're going to win plenty of Big 12 games. With Peterson on the floor, or, you know, maybe not as much without him, but they'll score enough points. I can't figure out the defense. It is very bizarre to me.
I don't know. It's just a weird world in KU basketball right now. Like, to think about the fact of the things I said when we started the segment of where they are, like, that's the part that's causing all the reaction, and for good reason. I mean, it's KU basketball. Like, this was a team that we saw win every single home game in Allen Fieldhouse. And I think that as the last 2 years, there's been disappointments. And I think that there's just been a lot of like, well, the roster just didn't work. Like, and that sometimes it just doesn't work, and that stinks, but it doesn't work. And now it's like, this is basically 10 new guys, and you got everybody that you wanted for the most part. Like you got the big fish that you wanted. I'll say that much. Like, and it's not working right now. It might fix itself, but it's not working right now.
It isn't. Can it? I think it can. I hope that they can put the limited Peterson thing behind them. This was the first game, right, where we were all totally clear. He did come out, but he didn't check himself out. I think they were just trying to conserve the minutes. He came out briefly at the end of the, what's that?
I think he might have. I'm not sure.
Did he check himself out?
I think so. I can't remember, but I'm pretty sure there was a conversation about that.
But he came back on. Yeah.
He didn't finish the game, but also they lost by 11 points.
Right. He was off and on. I don't know. Maybe it just wasn't that there was an obvious one. I'll have to go back and look at Self's comments. So maybe it is still plaguing them. Figure it out. I don't know. Figure it out. Just the expectation will have to be that late in the game, he might have to check off. I don't know why. Nobody knows why. I don't think he knows why. I don't think Bill Self knows why. But that is not the reason that they're giving up 80 plus a game in Big 12 play. And if it is the reason, it shouldn't be the reason. Whether Darren Peterson checks out at the end of a game, Rick says he did check out at the end. Okay, I missed it. I had the game on. I must have just missed him. But
it's easier to miss whenever the ball doesn't go by your face in the TCU game when you're checking yourself out.
Yeah, it's true. That one's a little more obvious. Most of the time, it's like, yeah, come up lame, whatever, put the compressions on the sideline, and we have 38 shots of that.
Yeah, there wasn't a Peterson cam in this game.
Yeah, I just, again, though, like whether he checks himself in or out of a game or not, that shouldn't have anything to do with them playing as poorly defensively as they have. And if it is, that's what you got to figure out first and foremost. Okay, like why is his availability the reason? Like, this is KU. Like, their defense should be locked in no matter who's on the floor. And usually Bill Self won't play a defensive liability. And sometimes that drives fans crazy. I don't disagree with it, though. I think it's fine. Like, I think that's a fine philosophy. But if Peterson is holding them back defensively,
I don't know if that's the case.
Like, I don't think it is. I don't think it is. I think the whole team is just not playing well defensively.
I agree. And that's I keep saying this, but that's the weirdest part about it. And like, there's just not answers about it, like why it's happening. And so
just watch it, KU. Everybody's focused on the offense with Peterson and how they're looking offensively with or without him. Doesn't matter. Like, they've scored enough points to win these games. That's the thing for me. They've scored enough points to win these games. They've been a really good defensive team up until the start of Big 12 play, with few exceptions. And it's not like they were just playing cupcakes either. They've been a really good defensive team against really good teams in the non-conference. And for whatever reason, they just haven't been in Big 12. And that is not Bill Self-like. And so, I mean, whether you make that an optimistic take or not, I'm not sure, because typically as teams can figure that part out, if they do, I think they'll have enough offense, even with a limited Peterson, to win some of these games. But man, 11-point road loss to West Virginia. It's just like, what is happening? And what on earth would we expect against Iowa State? I've something in the back of my head that says they'll probably have that game real competitive.
Because that's why not? They're gonna beat teams in Allen Field now. Like they're, we say this all the time. Like TCU, the TCU
lucky win. I mean, let's call it what it is. Gutty, gritty. The reality is, it's lucky in the sense that it's very unlikely. They're 0-3 without that.
Yeah, it's true. I'm with the, like we said this last week, and it's the most true statement that we have said about KU is that their floor is low and their ceiling is really, really high.
Yeah, there's the gap. It's like just there.
KU will find a way to beat Arizona at home. Like that's the kind of team that they are. Totally. And then they're going to find a way to go on the road the next game and lose to Cincinnati on the road or whatever it is.
Yeah, or vice versa, quite frankly, or vice versa, or they lose one at home they shouldn't, and they win this massive road game. But yes, last year, the last 2 years, it's been a very high floor and a very low ceiling by KU standards. It's total opposite this year. Now we're getting into that territory, though, of like I could live with going to the tournament with that, right? Like you get into the tournament with the low floor, high ceiling dynamic. Okay. Like, that'll be fun. That'll probably be more fun than the last couple of years. But now we're to the point where it's like, boy, they got to get there.
This is a fun conversation. If they are low floor, high ceiling, what's their ceiling that they've shown us so far this year? Sneaking by TCU?
No, beating Tennessee.
That's not the Peterson Jayhawks.
And Tennessee's 19 in the KenPom right now, which isn't
that's a big win.
Amazing. It's a big win, but it's not. They're still looking for the signature win.
With Peterson, they're like, it's TCU. That's NC State, maybe.
NC State, but is Missouri. let's see. NC State.
They beat the brakes off Missouri without Missouri's missing like three starters, I think, too.
Oh, gosh. It's gonna take a minute to find that. TCU is not like TCU's 53. Missouri's 57.
NC State was 24, Tennessee's 19, TCU's 53, and everybody else is above 50.
Where did you say NC State was?
50. Sorry, where'd they go? 24, excuse me.
24? It's probably NC State. Yeah. That's a road win. That was a Peterson game, right? Yeah. I don't even remember which games are Peterson games or not. It's been such a not fun thing to have and pay attention to and follow.
Oh, I know. I see it. I see him replaying in my head every time I close my eyes.
Yeah, I don't enjoy this story very much.
It sucks.
It's been not fun. So we're confused by KU. We don't know what to think, right? That's pretty much the bottom line. I think it's not just us either. It's just kind of everybody. We're all confused. We can't figure it out. What's going on? I don't know. Hopefully they can figure it out. Tomorrow night, Iowa State, 8 o'clock, unbeaten Iowa State. Good luck. K-State. Well, I mean, shockers, DJ, kind of can say the same thing. Can't quite figure out, you know, the best versus the worst, whatever. K-State. Boy, when was the last time we felt good about K-State?
With 5 minutes to go in the Nebraska game.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. I mean, the win against Creighton is looking a little better. Creighton has, you know, righted their ship a little bit. You feel pretty good about that road win.
I'm looking at their KenPom right now. I didn't realize this, that they won 5 in a row, lost 4 in a row, won 4 in a row, then lost 3 in a row.
It's been a long time. Following that one-point Nebraska loss, they got crushed by Indiana. Then you had the Bowling Green game where you're just like, that felt like you were like, boy, that's kind of rock bottom. Then they lost the next one. You're like, maybe it wasn't. And then you felt good again, right? Then we had that win streak you're talking about.
Then they beat Mississippi Valley State, yeah.
Yeah, and now you open the Big 12 0-3. Now, the schedule for 0-2, acceptable. Right. We all thought, and I do too, that they looked okay against BYU. They were completely outmatched against Arizona. You can't go lose to Arizona State. If you're gonna have any chance to win Big 12 games, that's a road game you gotta win. You can beat UCF coming back home. UCF, pretty good. UCF's not bad.
This is the perfect example of stepbrothers, the scene where they're going to the interview in the tuxedos. And it's like, okay, well, the tuxedo seemed pretty messed up now in hindsight. This is like You know, it's like, well, I mean, they scraped by Louisiana Monroe, but they won that game by 9. And now it's like looking back in hindsight, oh, okay, well, you know, maybe now that the Mississippi State wins, not the, you know, And so I don't know. I mean, it is trending awfully. Like, and that's the best way to put it is like, and we're not going to get on here. And I pride myself. And I think you do as well. We get on the show and we don't sit here and say like, they're terrible. Like they're terrible. Like, right. And like, we say what they've shown us so far,
yeah,
and what they've shown us so far is pretty bad. Like, it's not good.
What they've
like,
shown us lately,
yes,
is pretty bad. I agree, and I do try not to, like, I'd probably get more, there's no probably about it. I get more overly optimistic than I do pessimistic in general. So it happens here too. K-State, I don't think K-State's a really bad team. I don't think they're a terrible team. I think they're a decent roster that's playing really bad.
Correct.
And I don't know why that's happened. I think Jerome Tang is going to take a lot of heat, rightfully so, to be perfectly honest. I think he deserves a lot of heat right now because this is a roster that they're spending money on. Like, K-State is not, I mean, they've had two of the most high profile. I doubt that there have been, I mean, have there been any transfer portal players significantly or at all more coveted than or well paid, let's call it, than the last 2 years with K-State?
Yeah. There's not many that have landed back-to-back years with getting five-star transfers, basically, is the best way to put it. Like, I mean, you can make the argument that, like, KU might have with, like, Dickinson and then getting, yep, whatever, Zeke Mayo or whoever, or AJ Storr is a better example.
AJ Storr is probably the one, yeah.
Yeah, and so there's a couple, but, like, for K-State to do that, you're like, man, they've got some rosters. This is going to be great. And they have their roster is interesting because they have a roster that you think on paper should be just a juggernaut, and for four or five games at the start of the season, you're like, they're going to score 100 every single time that they play. Now they don't score 100 every time they play basketball anymore because they have struggled from three, and they shoot 40 of them, and their defense hasn't gotten better, and now it's just, you know, bad on bad, and it's just getting worse.
It's getting worse. That may be it. That's the problem, is that it's trending in the wrong direction. And that's the problem for KU too. But it's not unique to K-State. I just don't know, like, if there are the people putting in place the ability to go put together like rosters like they have at K-State cannot be happy with these outcomes. I mean, we've gone over it here just today, like the productivity of Tang is not good enough. And I like Jerome Tang as much as anybody that likes Jerome Tang. I love his energy. I love his personality. I don't love the results. Ninth in the Big 12. And it looks like that's kind of where they're headed again this year.
Yeah.
Under 500 last year. They're probably going to be under 500 again this year. Like, that's not good enough.
The biggest thing to say about Jerome Tang is that there's a lot of criticism about him. And, you know, when you lose games, that comes along with it.
Sure.
The thing, like, people always talk about, like, I mean, they're just not running an offense. Like, they're kind of just going out there and just kind of freeballing it and making it. They went to the Elite Eight doing that. Like, it worked.
Sorry, did you say freeballing? Just don't want to let that slide through.
What?
Freeballing?
I mean, freeballing is a normal term that has another innuendo for another term.
Yeah, I bet if I Googled freeballing right now, I know it would pop up. I just can't let that one slide. Okay. Anyway.
I don't know what, like, that's the thing, though, is that, like, you can say what you want to say, but the same people that are saying that are probably saying, like, he's a genius back in 2023.
Right.
And so, you know, I don't know what changed. I mean, they're not good defensively.
I don't think anything changed. I think... And this is why we were optimistic this year, right? That team that played a lot of ISO ball, that didn't, yes, run a lot of organized offense. Like, it was the perfect roster for it. So this year, like, and then the next 2 years, they didn't really have the perfect roster for that. They tried, like you thought, maybe people thought Doug McDaniel was going to do that, right? But it was like, okay, that didn't work. Those players didn't work out. Now this year, it's like, if there's anybody that is, you know, that is pointed to that type of offense, it is PJ Haggerty.
Yeah.
Like, that is who he is. PJ Haggerty is that player. He has been that player at a high level. Like, that is what he does. Perfect fit. It felt like if you could cherry pick Jerome Tang a player based on what we've seen in his 3 years, PJ Haggerty is the perfect player to come to K-State to support that. And it hasn't worked at all. And they're really struggling. And I don't know what is supposed to make us feel great about it if they can't beat Arizona State on the road. I'm very worried about where this could go. I think with KU, we've seen enough at times this year. Like, we've seen their defense be really good. You do know who's on the roster. All of those things. Like, there's room for them to figure it out. Whether they will or not, I don't know. But there's room for them too. Is there room for K-State too?
You can make the same thing you said about KU, about K-State, as the ceiling versus the floor argument. Their ceiling is as high as how many points can PJ Haggerty score,
and it's still
limited by their defense. Like,
I don't think that's their issue. Very high ceiling. I think their problem is their floor is low and their ceiling is low.
Yeah, like the thing, like their ceiling is like, this is the thing that, like, this is the best way to explain. Like, PJ Haggerty can score 50 points and they still might lose the game. Like, that's where they're at.
I hate it. What has happened to us?
This is the worst that I've seen. Like,
just in the last, but like, we, the Chiefs.
I know. Like, I'm not even talking about K-State. I'm talking about everybody.
It was a wildly disappointing college football season for us. Royals, I you better pick up the slack.
If they aren't good, we're just going to have to pick up a book club or something.
I don't know. Yeah, we'll start.
We'll start taking ideas.
Shocker bowling celebrated a natty at an halftime. Yeah. I'm going to have to, you know, learn the lingo. I know what a 7-10 split is, and that's about it. It's hard times. It's hard times. Everybody's worried about that poor reporter and everybody talking trash that was nice to Liam Coleman. What about us? Feel sorry for us.
Maybe we as reporters should start, you know, bringing that to press conferences around the state of Kansas and let them know that it's going to be okay.
I don't think there are more positive people. And look, there probably aren't others. Like, we'll ask every hard question. Like, that doesn't bother me at all. Never has. But I always want to be positive and happy. Like, I want to have fun every day on the show. Like,
and that's the thing. I'll say this while we got like 3 minutes left here in this segment, that like when I started doing this full time, like, I refuse to be the hot takey guy, and I really hope I'm not. And I hope people don't get that. Cause like, I was like, I'm just going to get on here and just talk about the reporting that I do. And that's what I'm going to do. I'm not going to come on here and say Jerome Tang needs to be fired tomorrow. Like, I'm not going to be that guy.
Well, I try to give fun takes and silly takes. I don't ever want to like advocate for firings or hirings either. Yeah. I just want to react when things are happening. I'm not advocating for anybody to like any decision to be made about any coach, but if they are being considered and made, then we got to react to it.
Well, I'm not going to come on here and just say like, KU's terrible with Darren Peterson. They're never going to win games with him on the court.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. I don't either. Maybe we should. Maybe we should start.
No, we shouldn't.
Coming up with, like, I can't watch this. Yeah, I can't. I don't know. I don't have the answers for any of these college basketball teams this year, except trying to say what we're seeing. I think KU has very high ceiling. They got to figure it out. I think the Shockers could absolutely be good enough to win their conference tournament. I have no idea what to expect until we get to that point. And I don't think K-State's going to be good enough to be very good at all. That's the opinion that I've come to on these things. All right, that does it for us. It is a confusing day. We'll enjoy the NFL playoffs. Those will continue tonight. You'll hear it right here at KFH. Texans, Steelers, old man Rodgers against the best defense in the league. Should be interesting, if nothing else, I would say. Who are you taking tonight? I think I took the Texans.
I took the Steelers. And by the way, we haven't talked about this yet. If the Steelers win tonight, my picks on Friday, 7-0.
Okay.
And I didn't put a parlay in it. Pisses me off.
That's your fault. I mean, that you have failed us if you had that opportunity and didn't take it. So I don't know what to tell you about that. We'll be back tomorrow with Wyatt Thompson. Maybe he can help us figure out K-State. We talked about it. Boy, they needed that one. They needed that one at Arizona State. We'll see what Wyatt's feeling about it tomorrow. Appreciate everybody being here. Thanks to Paul Mills. If you missed anything with Shocker Head Coach, you can go back and listen on the Odyssey app. We'll see you tomorrow.